Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, bond ratings. I'm going through here a long time ago, for years and years, when I did this kind of this lecture on bonds, I would pull up these charts, these quote services that were just like the stock markets, and they would give you the bond quotes instead of stock quotes. And there were reliable places to do this. And even, I believe, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times had online places where you could do this. Interestingly enough, anymore, it is really not easy to find bond quotes. I can go to so many places to find stock quotes, but when you want to try to find bonds, and all that information about each bond and all the price and the yield and the ratings and all that, it is not that easy to do anymore. It drives me crazy. One thing is that there's more of a philosophy or a perspective these days, who needs bond quotes? They're looking for the largest number of users of their site, so that makes the hit counter go up the most, and that means you get more ad revenue dollars. And so bonds, being something that not a whole lot of people, normal people, look at, they just don't have those kinds of sites. So I had to go to one that has kind of been there for a long time. It's still around. It's not the greatest place in the world, but it's better than nothing, I guess. It's a Morningstar site, but I'll go to that in a minute. First, quick look at the markets just to see how grim the days are getting. And, of course, they don't look all that good. Let me turn on these so you can see it, too. But you're going to see the continuing fallout from the growing war in Eastern Europe. Yes, it is a war now. There is military engagement. There is the occupation of a country by a foreign power. And so there is a war going on. Whether or not we get involved in it is actually kind of irrelevant. It's going to be a war one way, whether we're in it or not. Whether we see that we have a dog in the fight. But as you can see, the markets are down. It's a bear day. And I got a little out of the way there of the bear day. It was actually started out kind of a bullish day right off the bat. And I had some bear positions, and I got out of had bull positions, and I got out of them before the bottom dropped out. Fortunately, I got out without losing my shirt and made a little bit of money. But as you can see, the Dow is down about a quarter of a percent, and then the S&P is down more risk, down a half a percent, and then the NASDAQ is taking the biggest hit, the greatest risk portfolio of them. So there you are, dropping down about more than 3/4%. So it's a bad day. Now, the interesting part is crude oil is not going up. Eventually, it's going to react, but there seems to be kind of a bearish sentiment on crude right now because it doesn't look like the world oil supply is being affected all that much yet. Watch for this to go spiking up, though, in the near future, but not right now. Now, gold and silver. Silver is actually having a little bit of a strong day. Gold's kind of meaningless there. We don't worry. But here's the bonds. The bond yields are going up, which means bond prices are going down. So investors are pulling out of the bonds, causes the price to go down, and therefore the yield is up about 2.5 basis points. Nothing spectacular, but clearly investors don't want to be in equities, and they aren't all that excited about being in bonds. And so where are they going? Maybe a little bit of this is going into metals. I don't know, but it looks more like it's just going into cash. So wait and see. We're going to see what happens next. One place that we could see if that's actually holding, looking at the on-balance volume for the S&P 500 right now, We're more than halfway through the day, and as you can see, we have not even a third of the typical 52-week average daily volume. You see that? The big dogs are staying on the sidelines here. They're putting money into cash. They're getting it out of stocks. They're getting it out of bonds, and they are just sitting there waiting to see what happens next. That kind of volume means that there's very little trading, relatively speaking, with only 1.1 billion shares against a typical day that would be about 3.5 billion, and we're well more than halfway through the day now. So, yeah, the investment community is sitting back and seeing how is this all going to play out. If you look over here, London was kind of bullish. You saw a couple of bull runs through, and then they just dropped off the face of the earth near the end of the day yesterday. From what I heard from the people who are working with the London Exchange, they're saying Great Britain didn't think it was going to have too much of a problem with this war in Eastern Europe, but there's more and more sentiment that this is just going to spread. This is late 1930s all over again. You get this war started with a new version of Hitler, and he's just going to keep rolling across Europe. And so now England is, they're getting really concerned there. Here we go again with another crazed maniac coming at us. And the memories of the V2 rockets and the ungodly things that happened back then still are in the minds of some over there. Not a good day. So that gives you some reasons to be chipper and, you know, read your daily motivational quotes about things. But the world is kind of concerned right now. Now, let me talk about right away. Corporate bonds are of all kinds of different qualities. You, madam, might issue a corporate bond, and I'd say, I don't know about that. You're a risky company. You may not pay it back, scoundrel that you are. But then again, this fine person has a corporation, and it's very, very well recognized, got very strong revenues, hardly any debt on the books, so yeah, I think she's a very good risk. Now, there are rating agencies that, and I talked a little about this, that give bonds their number, their ratings. And I've got a story I'll tell you in a little while, a couple of stories that these ratings are more or less kind of drive what the investors, the lenders, will want for a coupon. So in other words, if the investment banks go to the big money and say, look, we've got a corporation here with a rating of AA, and the investors would say, okay, that's probably a coupon rate of about 4%. And then they go back later, well, we've got a company that wants to borrow money, and it's got a rating of A. Well, that's a little riskier, so the coupon rate is going to be a little higher on that one. And those rating agencies, to a large extent, they will drive the rating on bonds and therefore the cost of debt capital to corporations. The whole nine yards is right there. Now, a couple of matters in this regard. The big ones are Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. Now, I found some quotes to give you the S&P and Moody's, and you'll see that the ratings, the letters are not the same, but you can kind of get an idea of what's a good rating versus a bad rating. When I was in consulting, I helped small companies go public, stay public, help them raise capital and all that kind of stuff. And one company was it was strong. It had a good idea, let's put it that way. And it was moving forward with prototypes and ultimately with production. Essentially, to give you an idea, and I cannot disclose much about my former clients, this was in the 1990s, and they had developed a very high energy density battery. Well, big deal. That was kind of important, but their trick was that they made it so that the battery was very thin and it could wrap around and shape to things. And that was truly an important thing. So They had raised some capital, but what we wanted to do was start preparing for a debt issue. Issue a corporate bond of $10 million. That was kind of the thought we were working on. And get into the flow of stock and bonds, the capital structure, the whole nine yards. But they didn't have a rating. And I had not done this before. A lot of times in my business, I bluff people thought I did. I knew more than I did. I created a confidence so that they, and then I figured out what the hell I was going to do. So just being honest with you about how I played this. And so I went, okay, Moody's. I got the information. Now remember, this was in the early days of the internet. It wasn't like it is now where there's a billion websites and all that. But there were resources for information, and I found out how to contact Moody's, and I called them on the phone, and yes, it was a dial-up phone with a cord and everything like that. And I said, I need you to explain to me how your rating service works. How does my client company get a rating? Because it's going to issue bonds, and it needs a rating for those bonds. And the lady was very helpful. She said, well, we'll get you out the information. We're going to fax you some documents right away, and then we'll get you some more information. And, okay, this is very interesting. So, and I do not recall the actual numbers, but I remember the relative size. Well, I do recall the first one. And I said, okay, what's the cost of this going to be? And I was, kind of grimacing, because they're going to go through the corporate financials, just like we do in this class, ratio analysis. They're going to look at all that stuff, look at the SEC filings, and do all that kind of stuff, and then they'll determine the quality of the corporation, its credit worthiness, essentially a credit score, and then they'll issue a rating. And okay, what's this going to cost? And it turned out it was around $10,000 for the rating. And she said, this will take about 6 months. And I was just, oh, six months, this is not, what can we do? And she said, oh, we have an expedited service too. Now, we'll expedite it, and we will deeply look into your financials, and we will find what's good about your company, and we will do a much better rating if you pay our premium fee. Well, what's a premium fee? It was about $500,000. So in other words, we could pay $500,000 and we would get a credit rating that was at least an A, possibly a double A. That was an eye-opener for me. That was the first time I realized that these were not objective. These ratings might not be as objective as you think they are. Now the second pass at this came when it confirmed for me that there's a lot of suspicion involved here. In the 2008 financial crisis, one of the catastrophes had to do with the ratings that these rating services were giving to these exotic instruments. Bonds, stocks, and other things that really weren't what they represented themselves to be. They were actually underneath these bonds were derivatives, collateralized mortgage obligations, CDOs, CMOs, collateralized debt obligations. Essentially, they were very risky things that normal human beings should never play with unless you're using them for hedges, which was not what these were all about. Standard & Poor's was giving these highly exotic, but the exotica was hidden in them, very high ratings, AAA, AA. Okay. Well, after the crisis hit, a lot of banks and other financial institutions went to hell in a handbasket because they had what they thought were high-quality bonds that went into the crapper, because hidden in those were these things that were high-risk instruments. Standard & Poor's knew damn well that was in there, but again, you pay enough, you get a good rating. Well, Standard & Poor's got caught, and they were fined massively by the federal government for what they had done. So you know what Standard & Poor's did? They downgraded the rating of U.S. Treasury debt. In other words, they spit back at the SEC and the Treasury for punishing them. They actually downgraded the rating of the most powerful nation on Earth's bonds because they got spanked. So take these ratings with a little bit of a grain of salt. Do some research of your own. Don't just say, well, that's AAA. We're going to go with that. Take some advice here and look for yourself. And if you get a funny feeling, I don't know if that's really what it should be, you might be right. With that in mind, let me show you some quotes here. Now, Morningstar has been around for a long time. We have Morningstar terminals here. I don't use them much because they spook me. But here are just to throw a few out at you. And these are so, I'm having a hard time looking at these. Is there some reason this sucks? There. Good, that'll help a little bit. Okay, so going down here, let's look at some of these. Now, these 3Ms, okay? Notice these are the coupons, 2.00, 2.25, 3.15, 125. Okay, now, notice the callability. Remember I told you about callables? Callables, well, okay, maybe I didn't. A callable bond can be paid off before the maturity date. So in other words, I said, okay, 20-year bonds, we'll go with it, 6% interest, and I'll lend you $10 million. Now, a callable bond gives you the right, after a certain period of time, to call the bond in and pay me off early. That would happen if interest rates fell. Like if interest rates fall to 4%, you're going to say to me, hey there, Sparky, we're giving you back your money because we can refi at 4%. And of course, that honks me off because I was expecting to get 6% for 20 years, and you pull the rug out from under me after 5 years. Now, callability is within a window. And after the exam, I'll show you how you calculate yield to maturity and yield to call. But essentially, when you get a mortgage on a house, that's actually a callable bond. There is a place and time when you can actually refi. Now, a lot of banks will punish you for a refi. They'll charge you points to refi, but you can still refi. It's callable. So here you're seeing that callability provision. That generally makes a bond's coupon have to be a little higher because there's a risk to the lender. To me, I'm going to have to charge you not 6%. I'll charge you 6.25% because you could call the bond in on me. And so I'm caught with this money coming back to me when interest rates have fallen. So you can see the callability there and the coupon. Now, if you look here, a couple of things. Do you notice the maturity dates? That would indicate something about when the bond was issued. Let's say these were maybe 20-year bonds. So that would have been actually issued in 2002. You see that? It's due in this year. So it's coming close to the end of its life. Now, one thing you'll notice is that when bonds get close to the end of their life, they're going to be very close to par. Quote, the bonds are not $100.35.7. They are $1,003.57. Don't let a quote fool you. It is a tenth of the price. We just do that, and we've done it for centuries because it saved space on the broadsheets that used to be printed out every morning. But anyway, so you notice that corporate bond has a 2.00% coupon. That's not a big coupon, but that's a 3M was a pretty, reliable company. Now over here, the rating. Now, that's a Moody's rating. Moody's, I've got to be a little careful about this. If you see a number, that's usually a Moody's rating. That's usually Moody's if you see a number. And A1 is high quality. Now, S&P, you'll see pluses, minuses, and you'll see several letters sometimes. So they're kind of like these two agree. Sometimes they don't agree. One will give it a higher rating than the other. Well, that's that. Now, you notice with 3M, here's one that was issued probably about 4 years later, if they were both 20-year, you notice that its coupon was higher. That could have been because of one of two things. One was 3M was a little riskier by the time we get to 2006, which would have made it have to pay a higher coupon, or the interest rate environment was going up, so everyone was having to pay a higher coupon at that point. Looking at it, I just don't know too much about that. But you notice these were issued, wow. Those would have to be 30-year bonds. Do you see why they'd have to be 30-year? They're due in 46, so they can't be 20-year because that hasn't happened yet. So they'd have to be 30-year bonds. They would have been issued in 2016. So again, you notice that the coupon is even higher. Is that because 3M has gotten to be a riskier company? Well, you notice that they're still A1, A+. And so I would estimate that that's probably because the interest rate environment was substantially higher by the time we get to 2016. That's my call on it. I might be wrong about that. And then we got these. Holy cats. Well, that's confusing. Okay, here's the other thing. And I'm going to get into this in a minute. It also depends upon the hierarchy of the bond, where it is in the hierarchy of bonds. You see, let me get into that in just a minute here. I'm going to go down here and see if I can find something else just to show you. 3M's got so many bonds. And notice that the bonds, holy cow, Church of God bonds? Oh, I'm staying away from those. What? There's no rating on them even. Yeah, let me find something that's normal here, for God's sake. Let me go back here. Let's back down here to something closer. 20th Century Fox, 21st Century Fox. Whoa, look at those. I'm not sure what they're calling for the WR, but notice S&P is giving them pretty low ratings. Those are not particularly investment grade. And you see the coupons on them? You notice that they're lower. And it's like I said, with S&P, you'll see pluses and minuses and multiple letters. That's what I'm seeing right there. That's S&P at its a classic S&P rating. But 20th Century Fox, those are high yield bonds. Those are, they're not high yield. They're high coupon bonds. Wow. I never would have thought them paying that kind of price. And boy, they've got a ton of them out there, too. They've got a ton of them out there. Let me go try. I saw something a while ago, and now I'm not going to find it. But let me get into this part here. The hierarchy of bonds. Now, these could be debentures or they could be mortgage bonds. We'll just leave that off to the side. The highest priority, the first bonds, would be senior bonds. This is your first time borrowing money in the open capital markets, then that would be a senior bond. It has a priority. Let's say that senior bond issue has a face value of $30 million. Now, the next ones in the hierarchy, ignoring mortgage bonds versus debentures again, would be senior subordinated. They get... If there is a bankruptcy, they would get satisfied after the seniors had been completely made whole. Let's say that there are, 18 million in senior subordinateds. Now, some years down the road, the company decides, well, we want to run, get some more capital, debt capital. So then we would have the juniors. Now, the juniors are subordinate to the subordinated seniors, which are subordinate to the seniors. Let's say on the juniors, they went with $10 million. Now, this has to do with priority of claim. In the normal course of business, these will just get their coupon payments, and at the end, they'll get their face value with one last coupon payment. Nothing about it. This has to do with what happens in a bankruptcy proceeding. And finally, let's talk about some junior subordinateds. And let's say that there are 5 million of those. Okay. Again, in the normal course, these will just get their coupons, and they will, the lower in the hierarchy, the higher the coupon, because the more likely it would be that the company wouldn't be able to pay all of those interest payments on all those different debt issues. So they wouldn't all have the same coupon, they'd have rising coupons. Relative to the economic environment, of course, that plays in there too. Sometimes you'll see a senior debt issue that was issued when interest rates were very high in the economy. And then years later, that senior is still alive. It hasn't matured yet. And you'll see these juniors coming out with coupons that are half that. You think, how does that happen? Oh, it's because the overall interest rate environment came down. So just in a static way, these should have higher coupons. But in reality, okay, now. Let's say the company fails. There are two things that can happen. The company announces we cannot pay all of our interest for this semi-annual. Well, of course, these would be showing up at different times, but we got a coupon that we have to pay on the juniors, and we can't pay it. And next year, it looks like we won't be able to pay the seniors or the junior subordinateds or the senior subordinateds. So in other words, the company is now in default. It has missed an interest payment. At that point, the debt holders are in control. The company will attempt to stop a liquidation. The way they'll do it is they will file for protection with the federal bankruptcy court under Chapter 11. This is protection. The bankruptcy, once the filing has been made, the court says, stop liquidation, do not proceed, debt holders. You must freeze until we have a hearing. I'm being a little simplified, but not too much. Literally, it stops the liquidation proceedings right there in its tracks. So obviously, the company, knowing that it's about to default, is going to have that paperwork ready to file immediately once it has failed to make a payment. Sometimes it might even do so before the default to get in front of it. But one way or the other, Chapter 11 is protection for the company. At this point, the next thing that will happen is the court will say, you, company, corporation, and you, debt holders, get together and try to work out a reorganization. And I did a couple of those. It's a whole world of its own. You just sit down with the bondholders, the corporate directors, and their attorneys and accountants. Okay, let's see if we can work out something where we can extend the interest payments for a few years, or maybe we can find a partner who can help us out here. But Do you agree to this? Now, the bondholders have to say, yes, we agree to that. This is fine. This will be okay. Lower interest rate. Maybe they'll reorganize the debt, refi everything at a lower interest rate, something like that. Now, the bondholders are going to have some interesting incentives in a game like this. And you'll see that in a minute here. But at this point, if the bondholders agree, their trustees say, okay, this we'll do it, then the reorganization will be submitted to the bankruptcy court, and the court will set a time clock on how long they have to get this reorganization done and finished, and they'll submit a final document to the court saying the company can now emerge from Chapter 11 protection. We're all good. That would be a successful reorg. If it is not a successful reorg, then it will go to liquidation under Chapter 7. That's the end. Now, in either case, well, in the liquidation, the shareholders are done. Their stock is over. It's gone forever. You as a shareholder have lost your investment. That's it. Game over. In a reorg, the stockholders might survive, but I wouldn't bet on it. But one way or the other, the corporation would survive in a successful Chapter 11. In Chapter 7, it's just sell off everything in the company. Now remember, if they'll liquidate, they will turn everything into cash money. Now, if there are mortgage bonds out there, they get theirs immediately, first and foremost. I didn't do that here to save us some complication. Let's say that the corporation can pull off the liquidation here. Liquid value is, let's say, $52 million. Got it? Okay. So now it starts divvying up. These cats get $30 million. That leaves us with $22 million. Right? Yeah. Whoops. That means that these guys get 18, and that leaves us with $4 million. And then that goes to these guys. These are down $6 million. They lose as this juniors, and they lose, the junior subordinateds lose all of theirs. Yeah.
If it were
all a single issue, the junior was one block, they sold $10 million in bonds, junior bonds, it would just be allocated equally. That's an interesting question. I had never thought of that. But that, if there were nuances in there, if that was actually several issues that created the junior, which might happen if it were a serial issue, yeah, your idea would be right. But in this case, no, it's just equally among all of them. Now, notice something here in this one. These debt holders like this, they aren't the only debt holders of the corporation. You have a whole lot, suppliers. They're going to step up to the plate and say, have their say. People who worked for it, who didn't get paychecks when the bankruptcy happened, or salaried workers, hourly workers, they're down there too. And even customers who put in orders that hadn't been fulfilled yet are in there too. All of those are listed in the bankruptcy filing under chapter 7. Now, it's an interesting thing that this had been, I don't know, maybe about 20 years ago or something like that. There was a court case. I think it made it all the way to the Supreme Court. A company that took orders for big ticket durable goods, they had a pile of inventory that hadn't been shipped yet when the bankruptcy was declared. They put in their filing through an attorney. It was just one attorney for the customers, kind of representing their interests, said, they shouldn't be part of that. They should get their money back or get their inventory, get their stuff. That was how it was. The attorney for the customer said, just send them what they ordered. They bought it and it's there waiting. The court said, no, that is part of the assets and it will be liquidated and dispersed in order of priority of claim. So they got nothing. Even though their inventory was there waiting to ship, it was liquidated and that money went to the seniors right away. Which seems in a way kind of like, forgive the expression, but I think we call that bullshit. The same is true of workers who don't get their salaries. They're saying, come on, you're screwing us? Well, yeah, you're way down there on the list, cupcakes. Sorry. So that gives you an idea of how brutal this is. Now, I want you to notice something else here. Do you see, just make sure you see this, that the reorg is more desirable to the juniors and the junior subordinateds than it is the higher up you go on the food chain? Do you see that the seniors and the senior subordinated say, screw it, liquidate? They're going to be very reticent to let that company go on. Because once they let it go on, they're agreeing to ride that dog. And if the company screws it up again, that asset value might be $20 million the next time the company can't make a coupon payment. So the higher the seniority of the debt issue, the less they are going to be friendly about a Chapter 11 reorg. Now, the juniors and the junior subordinates are going to say, yeah, let's give them a chance to come back, for God's sake, because we get hardly anything, junior subordinates get nothing, if we go to Chapter 7. We might be able to recover if you let the company come back, struggle out of this mess that it's in. Do you follow how that works? It's one of those things that can... It's difficult to call here because obviously the senior and the senior subordinator are going to have powerful legal counsel. They're going to have lots of people wearing suits and influencing the court's decision. And that means that it's not as likely in a situation where you have such an asymmetry of power that the Chapter 11 will go through to a successful reorg. They do, and sometimes there are some pretty nasty characters who step in to help that process along. For example, you can be part of a private equity fund. See, I'm looking at this right here, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a play here. As a private equity fund, I'll go to you, Mr. Corporation, and I'll say, look, work with us. We'll get you the money to get you back on track, and we'll file with our powerful attorneys and our massive billions of dollars. We'll get that court to reorg. And you're going to tilt it toward us. You're going to give us stock. You're going to give us debt that is senior to all of the others, and we'll get you out of this mess. And, of course, you're going to be very excited about that. Oh, my God, we've found our angel. And, of course, down the road then, the angel turns into Satan himself because then we've got you, and the next time you go into bankruptcy, we just say, sorry, no Chapter 11, Chapter 7, we liquidate. We smear your assets all over the world, and we profit on both ends because you gave us stock, which we dumped as fast as we could, and then you gave us debt, which we're going to make sure that that is what gets paid first. So private equity can step in here too, and other kinds of nefarious animals. Private, as I've told you before, private equity firms are the scum of the earth, and I am very excited to say that I am getting one put together. Capitalism. But anyway, so here we are. This is the way it works if a company is in trouble. If a company is in trouble, that's where you, if you go into a corporate environment, first of all, for God's sake, don't be so desperate for a job that you don't look at their numbers. One thing, look at their times interest earned. How many times over can operating income pay the interest expense? If it looks like it's getting drifting too close to one, that means that somewhere along the line, you might be out of a job and you might not even get your last paycheck. That's one thing to look at. Another thing, too, is in the corporate environment, most of you are going to be in the corporate environment. That doesn't mean that you just step away and listen to the company's rah-rah announcements and newsletters and happy meetings. You keep your eye on the financials. And if you start to smell trouble, that's about 1 second before you start sending resumes out to other companies. This is practical advice, and I've had more than a few students over the years who have ended up being in companies when they hit the skids and they got themselves caught in a Chapter 11 filing or a Chapter 7, and they were out of a job. Keep your eye on your company. Regardless, as I said, of how happy news they give to you and how wonderful their newsletters are and how they still have their Christmas party and they still have other events and giveaways and friendly stuff, that doesn't mean that you do not look at the financials and consider for yourself. That, and you don't have to be a financial genius. You've got the answers. I've been showing them to you here all along. It's just the way life is out there. Now, some companies teeter very close, but then they manage to pull themselves out. Like I think I told you last time that a good example of that was Steak and Shake. They had even telegraphed their concern that they wouldn't be able to satisfy a debt obligation. Last year, I think it was. And of course, that meant that, you know, everyone, here comes Chapter 11. For God's sake, somehow they managed to pull out of it. The other side of that, though, is that companies that tend to get that close to a Chapter 11, even if they don't go into it, the company is damaged by it. Look at Steak and Shake. You notice how there's very few, the menu has been completely contracted. Thank God they still have that sandwich with the egg on top. But you notice that now they're talking about going to a new model. Several restaurant chains are talking about going to a new model. No indoor seating. Even the big chains are going to that. It's a cost-saving maneuver. And that, why are you saving costs like that? Oh, because that's what our customers want. Bullshit. You're doing it to cut costs. You're saving yourself your bacon. Something's wrong here if you have to do those kinds of things. That's what the background is. Numbers are great. They're excellent for accountants. But in finance, we have to be a little more cynical. We want to dig under and see what's down there behind the scenes. Just like if I go and crash at your place, I'm going to check the basement to see if there are bodies there. Well, yes, I will. Okay, so you understand that there is a story behind this story here. Now, this goes to the old saying, never assume intentions, only capabilities. If your company is capable of harming you for its own interests, guess what's going to happen? Trust no one. That's all I have for you. I thank you.